Welcome to the Procurement Software Podcast, where we aim to educate and inspire you about how technology is changing and shaping our profession. The truth is, there's never been a more exciting time to be in procurement, but only if you're one of those organizations that's embracing the change and driving new developments. And this podcast is all about giving you the tools to help you get there. So buckle up and let's get right into this week's show. Well, hello there, ProcureTech fanboys and fangirls. A very warm welcome to a brand new series. And as you can see, we've got a different name. Thought it was time that we rebranded the podcast and switched it around. And it's now the Procurement Software Podcast. The reason I did that was really just to stay on brand. You know, when I initially launched what was the ProcureTech Podcast back in March 2020, wow, how time flies, 4 years on. Doesn't feel like that in some ways. When we initially started the podcast, it was brand new, didn't have a website, didn't really have any products or services on the back of the podcast. And I was doing it really back then as really a way to explore and get conversations with a lot of startup founders that I just felt really inspired by, who were doing some great things in terms of the tech that they developed. Obviously now, 4 years on, we've got procurementsoftware.site, which has now been up and running for just over 2 years when this goes live, and wanted to bring the podcast really under that whole brand umbrella. So I thought it was about time that we rename the podcast really to reflect that. So what should you expect in this series other than the obvious new name that we have? Well, one major change that I'm going to do is a lot more solo content in this series. And there are two reasons behind this. Number one, just being completely honest with you, is that putting guest shows together and coordinating guest interviews is a lot of work and takes up a lot of time. And I wanted to be absolutely certain that I could maintain the cadence of delivering a weekly podcast. So an easier way to do that is obviously to throw a lot more solo episodes into the mix. But one of the other reasons was LinkedIn is a wonderful content platform. And, you know, I'm really, really grateful of the reach that it's given me in terms of building an audience. But it's very constrained in the depth that you can go to in a lot of the posts that you put on the platform. And I get a lot of good engagement with what I post on LinkedIn, but I've often felt the itch that I'd really like to explore some of those topics in a much more long format. And obviously a great channel to do that is through this podcast. So some of the hot topics and discussion points of the day, I'm going to use this channel to expand on as a bit of a solo episode in terms of sharing my thoughts of where I think the market's going, or some of the up and coming things that I think are going to be a big thing as time goes on, and some of the trends and future predictions. So we'd love to get your feedback on that as we put more solo content out. For this first episode of the new series, I'm actually going to turn the tables and I'm going to republish, with their kind permission, an interview that I did for my good friend Graham Crawshaw over at Casmi for his podcast. And it's not very often that I get to post when I'm being interviewed and answering some of the questions from a really good interviewer on the other side. So this first episode is going to be just that, where I share some of the tips and tricks of how to put together a compelling business case to get investment into ProcureTech, as well as sharing some predictions and some market trends that I saw at the time when that interview was done. I think it was around about November time when Graham interviewed me, so last autumn. But most of this is still very much relevant in what we see today. So yeah, roll the tape, as they say.
So delighted to have James Meads with us today to talk about developing a business case for ProcureTech. James, great to see you again.
Thanks, Graham. Pleasure to be back.
Let's focus on. We want to talk about, yeah, this developing a business case for ProcureTech. Before we get into the detail, what's going on? What are the trends going on in ProcureTech at the moment, because I get the sense it's a little over-facing, and it's great what you're doing to try and simplify it. How would you summarize what's going on, James?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big topic to try and just drill down into a few soundbites, but I'll do my best. I mean, one of the big things that we saw back end of last year when the economy started to teeter a little bit was VCs that had been seemingly throwing their money at pretty much everything that moved in the procurement tech space, I think got a bit of a wake-up call and a reality check. And that meant that funding started to dry up, particularly for startups that were seeking a later round. So getting things like seed funding, which is typically the first round of funding that a startup would get beyond like angel or family and friends type of investment round, that's still pretty buoyant. But I think moving beyond that to Series A, Series B, VCs are becoming a lot more picky about who they invest in. And I think that has sort of sent reverberations around the market, really. Obviously, since then, since we last did the podcast, Cooper have laid off a bunch of people and they've been acquired, which again, I think sort of sends a signal that procurement tech companies perhaps need to focus more on their core products and their core market. I don't want to single out Cooper specifically. I don't think they've got bad product per se, but I just think they were trying to be everything to everybody. And a solution like that is eminently going to benefit big enterprise corporations. But right, just the complexity and the time it takes to implement it, it's always going to be a struggle to embed something like that in a mid-market business. So I thought that was perhaps a bit of a foolish foray that they took trying to get into that market. So we are seeing a bit more sort of back to basics in terms of how tech companies are approaching their sales and marketing strategy. You know, obviously with me being on it, essentially selling stuff, sponsorship, advertising, content to procurement tech companies, I've noticed that a lot of them have cut back a lot in terms of their marketing teams and budget, which reflects a sign of the times. In terms of developments, what generally in terms of the marketplace, probably no great surprise to say that everyone's trying to build or incorporate generative AI into their solution to a certain extent, or they're frantically racing to get something to market that can bring that in, especially the more guided buying, autonomous sourcing types of products. They're all over it because typically at the point where a stakeholder approaches procurement and wants to buy something, that's when, you know, the user friendliness or the intuitiveness of a procurement tech product really comes into play. You know, if you've got a spend analytics tool, you doesn't necessarily need to use generative AI to be able to talk to it in plain language, because only procurement and maybe finance people will use it. But if you've got a source to pay solution and you've got an e-procurement module, and that's definitely a great case for generative AI, as is, you know, extracting stuff out of contracts. If you've got a CLM solution and you're searching for certain clauses among everything that you've got in your contracts database. So that's another big one. The other one that I'm seeing is that intake category, which pretty much didn't exist until Zip came onto the market around about early 2021, I think it was, that they launched their product. And that obviously has taken the world a little bit by storm. And they've had a lot of copycat companies sort of jump on that bandwagon, realizing that it was a pretty open space in terms of no one was really doing that. Getting at the point where a stakeholder wants to buy something, or when a supplier wants to get into an organization, a lot of the legacy source to pay suites didn't really do that very well, or at all in some cases. You know, it was clunky, it was not very intuitive around how a supplier or a stakeholder would interact with that piece of tech, the first point of contact. And I see more and more companies coming into that space, either existing solutions that are expanding and developing an intake module, or completely new solutions coming to market and trying to be something that hasn't existed before. So they would be the big ones, apart from obviously sustainability and ESG being a massive growth area. But I think that probably was already the last time we spoke.
Right. It is still confusing, though. There do seem to be more and more companies, systems. Of course, everyone talks about theirs incorporating generative AI. So it's definitely the trendy thing to be trying to sell your system. So, yeah, it does get a little overwhelming. And procurement's having it tough. There's a lot going on out there in terms of priorities, pressure on budgets. So Given the landscape that you've just described, how would you say that actually procurement should start? Where should it start? And what sort of business case could it actually use to demonstrate that it should be focusing on getting such investment to bring the tools in as part of a digitalization process?
Yeah, so I think it's a great question, Graham. And I think before we break down into going into detail around, you know, how to convince the CFO to give you a budget to go out and buy it, I think we need to take a step back, really. And Simon Sinek in his book, Start With Why, I'm not sure if you've read it. I'm sure some of your listeners will be familiar with it. But his message within that book, he could have actually said it probably in one chapter and managed to spin it out into 200 odd pages. But his message in that book is, and he always uses the example of Apple, that Apple don't tell their customers all of the technical specifications of what their product does. They give them a reason to want to go out and buy an Apple product with a beautifully designed slick notebook or iPad or iPhone. It's more around the why they exist, which is basically, you know, simplifying tech products and giving their users a great user experience. Whether you love Apple or you hate them, I think you can't deny that they've done that. So I think that applies to procurement technology as well, that if you're a CPO or if you're a head of center of excellence or procurement process optimization or whatever your title might be that encompasses this, I think what you need to be looking at is, yes, you need to digitalize clearly because everyone's going to have to do it at some point. But why are you doing it? What's your end goal? Is it because you're having a lot of accounts payable issues? Therefore, you know, some sort of vendor master data supplier onboarding platform may be the best solution. Is it because you're worried about having a supply chain scandal somewhere in your tier N supply base that you don't have any grips on at the moment? Or is it just because you're coming from a very decentralized organization and all of your contracts are in somebody's desk drawer somewhere? I think once you understand what is the biggest challenge that you're facing in procurement, you know, it might even be, you know, we need to bring millennials and Gen Z into the organization to replace our retiring team, and we need to give them an incentive to come and work for us. So we need to have some cool tech in place. So I think it's really around finding your why, because then the what and the how in terms of what features will the platform have, how much is it likely to cost, what do you need to do before you implement it, i.e., you know, clean your data or maybe do a bit of PR in your organization to bring them on the change journey. I think that will become clearer once you know your why of why you're doing it. What's the biggest itch to scratch? Because it's a journey and you're not going to go from a completely analog, completely manual, perhaps immature procurement organization to a world-class digital organization in 12 months. That's just delusional. Yeah. Even if you've got an unlimited budget and you've got an army of consultants to help you to do it, you're just not going to be able to do it that fast.
Okay, so if actually, I like the idea, as always, of it being focused around what the business needs are. So you're saying almost to focus on your biggest problem and see what tools can actually support that and use that for your basis to start and then build from there.
Yeah, either that or to say we need to get our spend in order first before we can figure out where we need to go next, or we need to get our vendor data all in one place so as we're not just firefighting, dealing with accounts payable problems or late deliveries or whatever it might be. There are certain basics that one could reasonably argue you should put in place first. Spend analytics if you're very much a cost-focused organization, or maybe a vendor master data platform if you're more focused on compliance and ESG, for example. So there are ways that would be like natural entry points depending on what's the biggest driver of your objectives. But fundamentally, it's what's giving you the biggest issues right now. And that would, I would suggest in most cases, be a good place to start, unless you've got a strategy of trying to build everything off of one platform or one suite that you can then bolt on, you know, best of breed or point-based solutions that do one specific thing onto that general ecosystem.
Okay. And is that where you're seeing companies do the most to get this system and presumably then bolt on with sort of API leaks, et cetera, to bring it all together?
There are two different approaches that I tend to see. So in organizations that have already done a certain level of digitization, if they've already got
a legacy source to pay suite in place, the SAP Ariba's, the Coopers, the Jaggers, the iValuers of the world, they're unlikely to switch out that technology because it's a massive IT project, and probably the economic buyer or budget holder that made the decision to go with that piece of software doesn't really want to have egg on their face to say, hey, we picked the wrong solution. Mm. It's just reality, right? You know, senior people don't want to admit mistakes to that magnitude. So in those organizations that already have that embedded within their organization, what I'm seeing is they tend to look now for best of breed solutions that can do or that can solve problems that the platform doesn't solve particularly well. You know, none of these suites have particularly good spend analytics modules, for example. None of them really have good SRM modules, supplier relationship management modules. So we're seeing that in the ones that have already done digitization to a certain extent and maybe have struggled a bit with user adoption, and they need to bring something on a bit more user-friendly to tackle these specific problems. If we look at greenfield opportunities, and they typically tend to be now more towards the mid-market because most enterprise procurement teams have done some level of digitization in the past. They might have done it badly, but at least they've started. If you go into a 300, 400 million pound or euro company, you've got a head of procurement that's maybe come from a senior role somewhere in a corporate procurement team and has taken a step down in terms of company size to do a head of role. He or she's going to have a pretty blank canvas in terms of what they can do. So they can then perhaps look at, okay, well, what are the best of breed solutions that solve the two or three problems that I've got a real issue with the best? Because, you know, in that size of company, the dirty data problem is not going to be as bad as it is in a FTSE 100 or Fortune 500 organization. So that could work in that type, in that size of business. You know, trying to mesh together 10 or 15 best of breed solutions in an enterprise organization probably ain't going to work.
Right.
But in a mid-market business where, you know, the organization is not that much of a behemoth, it can work because you don't necessarily need it to communicate across multiple different ERPs and business units and so on and so forth.
Interesting. So actually really making it relative to the size of your organization and what you've already achieved to date is sounds pretty important to get right.
Yeah, and industry sector as well. I mean, there are solutions that very much focus on public sector, for example. You know, I know Casmid typically members of private sector, but there are solutions out there that focus very much on public sector. And to your point, saying that the market is quite confusing and is growing and growing, I think that's just really a hat tip towards the fact that procurement tech companies are starting to niche down on particular geographies and industry sectors and size of business in terms of what they do and who they serve, because it's a crowded marketplace and they have to find their spot.
How do you go about sort of finding what really is going to help you? You understand the business problem. And I must say, it still staggers me that we talk about data and the need for cleaning, but that's probably a subject for another conversation. Assuming that you've got something that is workable, assuming that you've got some of the tools already in place, how do you get through that sort of minefield of other supplier options that there are? Because, yeah, as you say, crowded market, it is confusing, and everyone promises the earth. So how do you see through that? What's any tips for asking the right questions or moving it forward?
It's pretty easy to be able to filter out what's out there in the marketplace and then to niche down on what you're looking for. I mean, with what we do over at procurementsoftware.site, we, on the front end of the website, we enable users to do that completely free of charge up to a point. I mean, we don't offer the same degree of filters on the website as we do if they come to us and buy access to our back-end database. But fundamentally, you could go on there and say, okay, I want, let's say, contract management software that is aimed at a mid-market business and is not an early stage startup. And then it would spit out the 15 or so companies in our database that match that criteria. Now, most procurement leaders, I would confidently say, understand how to do due diligence on an IT supplier or on a software supplier, assuming they've got an IT category manager within their organization. So my challenge to some of these bigger research organizations, so I won't name them, but I think everyone knows who they are, is why do people need to go out and take out a five-figure subscription with these guys when really the biggest challenge, as you alluded to, is that there are a multitude of solutions out there and people don't necessarily understand the breadth of the market. But if they've got a tool that enables them to do that, then you can then pretty confidently be able to get from 10 or 15 down to the 3 or 4 that you think are going to be real contenders for your organization. And whether you use someone like us or another outsource partner to do that as a piece of consultancy work, or whether you give it to your IT category manager, it doesn't really matter. You get to the same result in the end, depending on your budget and how quickly you want to do it and how much resource you have and expertise in your internal team. But I think the biggest challenge is just getting from 400 logos that you would see plastered across solutions maps of procurement tech providers through to, well, okay, who serves my industry sector or my size of business with the solution, with the modules or the functionality that I want it to have.
Okay, so it's not quite as over-facing as perhaps it first seems when you just look at it across all of the suppliers that are available.
No, definitely not, because there's not 400-odd suppliers that are all doing the same thing. Right. They're all vastly different. I mean, okay, probably the most crowded space is source to pay, and there's maybe 60 of those, but they're all doing something. There are some sort of Me Too products, but they're all doing something slightly different in terms of industry sector or geography that they're targeting. You know, you've got a lot of copycat solutions that are serving emerging markets, for example, that have basically taken what a big source to pay provider can do in Europe or North America and slimmed it down a bit and made it relevant to the Middle East or Africa or Latin America or wherever it is they're trying to sell it. So when you scratch the surface a bit, you do find that there aren't that many copycat products out there, except for in the really crowded areas, source to pay being one of them.
Okay. No, that all stacks up. Makes sense. Thank you. We spoke about those sort of more niche areas like supply relationship management, like dealing with risk, some of the ESG factors. Isn't it harder to actually then have the business case to actually, how do you return on investment? What sort of goes into that calculation? Because I think for some of the other areas that you talk about, yeah, those main ones that companies focus on, it sort of makes sense that, yeah, you need that level of efficiency and you could probably justify it with headcount. You could justify it in a number of areas. But some of those more, I'd say fluffy, but you know what I mean? Those sort of SRM and risk where it's intangible. How is procurement justifying and putting together a business case for those types of modules or companies to link into their source to pay system?
Yeah, it's a brilliant question. And it is highly dependent on business that's asking that question. I would say SRM and risk management, I would personally say it's fairly straightforward to put a business case together for that. Certain aspects of sustainability, it's tougher depending on whether it's a must-have like CO2 emissions or whether it's more of an ideological or political statement that you want to make in terms of brand equity. But SRM and risk, I would say, certainly from an SRM perspective, know your supplier is becoming the new sort of KYC, know your customer, which is the acronym that goes about in the banking and finance world. I think now with the amount, and we can almost sort of throw risk into there as well, the amount of potential disruption that supply chains are faced with right now, I think it's a pretty easy business case to put together to say, hey, especially in manufacturing businesses, right, what is the cost? I mean, I come from the automotive background originally. I worked for Jaguar Land Rover at the start of my career. And I can't remember the exact figure, but it was tens of thousands of pounds that we charged suppliers for every minute that they shut down the production line. I mean, I think if you look at it this way, and again, it's moving the procurement conversation away from cost savings towards what's the impact on the top line. And if you don't have a supplier risk strategy in place and you don't have ways to, you know, track shipments that are underway from a end-to-end logistics point of view, or if you don't have very accurate vendor master data when it comes to things like Incoterms or payment terms or material specs, even, God forbid, if you buy something that's out of spec because someone's not updated the material master, if that causes a shutdown in production, the impact on loss of sales and loss of profit is immense. Likewise, if you've got the wrong Incoterms in your system and you've got that as being a 6-week lead time delivered, but it turns out that it's a 6-week lead time and it's ex works, then You know, suddenly that's an air freight that you have to go out and purchase. And while it wouldn't in the traditional sense be marked against procurement as a cost increase, it's something that does hit top and bottom line in terms of profitability of the end product. If you're having to scramble around and do emergency transport because the master data that you've got in your system's a mess. So I would definitely put the business case forward for SRM and risk if we move towards more of a value and top line driven mindset. ESG is a little bit more difficult to quantify. Certainly, I think CO2 emissions will be easier to quantify the saving or the cost avoidance when companies have to pay and do emissions trading beyond the biggest organizations. I think that's going to come at some point. The more social attributes of ESG, I think that's harder to quantify. And I think that's more currently, you know, maybe legislation will change in future, but currently I think that's very much more down to the ideological stance of the business and whether they feel that the marketing that they can do off the back of that will then drive brand value that will ultimately increase their sales or increase their profitability. So that one is a little bit harder. Maybe someone that's more sort of into the ESG space can correct me on this. I mean, it's not an area that I'm highly focused on or highly knowledgeable of, but I think that one probably is tough. The social aspect, I think, is tougher, but the certainly emissions, supplier risk, and supplier data, I think, is pretty easy to quantify and put a business case together for.
Even if it involves telling that bit of a story, like you've just almost given that sort of, yeah, it's not necessarily hard fact numbers, but here's the story, there's the risk, this is what you're trying to justify the investment for. I think in terms of the blunt calculation supporting scope 3 emissions, well, that's starting to be emerging as certainly a very popular one, more and more companies wanting to get involved. In fact, even if we heard scope 4 emissions, it's just like, my goodness, where does this start and stop? It just seems that procurement gets dumped on with all this stuff where we can help. And of course, let's face it, we are very good at addressing some of these issues, responding to new legislation that comes out. And if we can use that as part of the business case to justify saying, look, your business, you're asking us to do all this, we need some help, we'll need some tools, then that, I guess, goes into the mix. And if the company then thinks, yeah, you know what, we are going to get procurement to do this, it's got to provide the capability in order to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, because sustainability, or at least emissions, is definitely on every CEO's radar. Mm. So if that could be used as an avenue for us to get budget to invest in tech, let's jump on the back of it and do whatever we can to get that investment. Because the tech that goes into spend analytics platforms, it's no surprise that a lot of spend analytics platforms have sort of grown now and evolved into being data analytics platforms and are incorporating CO2 emissions measurement within their platform, within their product. And you know, while it's not perfect, it's still early days, it's an obvious succession of what they offer as a product. So if we can jump on the back of that, and I think you can make a reasonably good argument to say that procurement probably will have responsibility for delivering scope 3 emissions throughout the supply chain, because we ultimately manage the supply base. Yep. Maybe it will fall under the chief supply chain officer or the COO rather than the CPO, but there will be a heavy involvement of procurement within that. The more sort of social regulatory parts of ESG, I'm a bit more skeptical about as to whether procurement should own that. But certainly emissions, it just makes logical sense. And a lot of the tech that can help deliver that can also do things like spend analytics.
So in summary, I think you're saying base your decision-making on the business problem you're trying to resolve. See what the technology can do to support and deliver that outcome, primarily based on what you've already started and the fundamental, so that source to pay system that you've got in place, that will sort of direct you as to the modules or the best in breed systems that will make sense to connect and justify. And I guess still sort of make sure you're asking the right questions rather than just responding to all the hype and accept that every supplier is going to be saying that generative AI is within their system. But it's, how does that really actually help? How does it help you achieve the business problem that you're setting out to address and resolve?
Yeah, they're all doing it, aren't they? It's a bit like men on dating profiles are always 2 or 3 inches taller than they really are. It's
absolutely. So if you just know that, then I guess it just, you know where you stand. I think that's probably the main point. And just make sure you're asking all the questions to really understand and make sure there's a fit for your requirements in your organization?
There is also the pure financial aspects of it as well. I mean, if you're looking at your wage bill for your procurement team, and if we use round numbers, if you've got, say, a $1 million or euro wage bill for your procurement team, and that's split across 10 category managers, you can, for that same cost, you can probably reduce the number of people that you have in your team, maybe have one or two admin or specialist roles, and invest some of that wage bill into tech and still deliver the same or even better results, just because you're specializing and you're relieving a lot of the administrative or grunt work away from highly skilled knowledge workers that shouldn't be doing that type of work. And I think that's the other argument for tech, be it something more simple like source to pay or e-sourcing or spend analytics, where, as you rightly said, it's a lot easier to justify the return on the investment, or, you know, having something that uses generative AI to do some basic supplier due diligence, so as you're not spending all day on Google or on Dun & Bradstreet trying to do it yourself. I think there is an argument to say having category managers plus specialists and admin roles together with tech is going to be the procurement team of the future. Whereas now, I think just a lot of administrative and transactional work is being dumped onto category managers simply because there's nobody else to do it.
Right. Now you're being very controversial if you're suggesting giving up some of the salary budget in order to support the tech. But yeah, I guess we know procurement teams are getting smaller, and you've got to spend that money wisely.
Yeah, and it doesn't necessarily mean spending it on fewer people. It just means spending it on the right people for those roles. Mm. And if that means just having a mix of more junior people and more senior people, rather than having a fairly homogenous layer of category managers in your team, that's perhaps the better way to go. But I think I'm a realist, right? I mean, procurement is generally a pretty lean function within most organizations. So if the CPO is taking the initiative when he goes to have the conversation with his or her CFO, it's going to be a lot easier conversation than him or her going to the CFO and saying, I need 100K to go and buy some software. So, of course, thanks to Graham for being a great interviewer and teasing those answers out of me. I will link in the show notes to his podcast, so as you can check out other episodes that he's done as well. It's a great listen. Another great podcast in the procurement technology and procurement in general space. Thank you again for listening to the show. If you'd like to be so kind and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, if you listen to us on Apple, I would be eternally grateful. It does help us to march up the searches and get more organic reach. So anything that you can do to leave us an honest review of what you think on the platform would be fantastic. Other than that, I will catch you again same time next week. Take care wherever you are in the world. Be productive and disruptive in everything that you do. And bye for now.